You are listening to the Oddball Aussie Podcast with me, your host, Oz Oddball. During this episode, you may hear things that challenge your own beliefs, but please have an open mind and enjoy. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Aussie Oddball. And if you have any stories you want to share, send them to theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome back. It has been way too long, and I've been very keen to get back into the swing of things, get back into a bit of podcasting. Very much missed it. And I hope you've all been doing well. It's been a year since I spoke to you all. A really important break I had to take. A lot of stuff going on in my own personal life. So, yeah, that was really important that I had that break away. But definitely back now, enjoying being back. I've been working on a lot of stuff, dusting off a lot of old files, going through a lot of projects that I wanted to do last year, and starting to put them all together. So yeah, we're looking at a pretty busy year. Today actually marks the day of 4 years ago when this podcast actually started. So I may have gone quiet again for a couple of weeks, but same because I've been getting things ready. And yeah, tonight we've got a bit to talk about. I'm not going to harp on the where I've been and what I've been up to type of thing. I see a lot of podcasters doing that when they've been away for a while. But no, I'm wanting to talk to you tonight about aliens. I mean, that's what we do. We talk about the weird, we talk about the wonderful, and we talk about the things that we can't explain. And yeah, there's been a lot going on, hasn't there, since I've been away. So that's been the other thing, is catching up on everything going on in the weird. It's getting even weirder, isn't it? There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot to talk about, and a lot of plans for the future. So tonight we're going to talk about aliens. We're going to talk about what sort of aliens are people encountering. We saw recently the jellyfish, or some people call it the octopus alien, in Mexico and parts of America. That's been really doing its rounds, and we've had people saying that it's definitely an alien, other people saying it's some sort of balloon floating around in a car park. It could be anything. It could be anything. We always have our minds open to what it could be. But yeah, it's definitely interesting. Anyone who's listened to the show in the past, I'm not a skeptic, but I'm also not going to just believe everything that my eyes see either. I want to actually find out some more information. But I thought, as a bit of a fun start to my return, is let's talk about aliens. Let's talk about what's out there. Let's talk about what people have encountered. And we're not talking about Gallifreyans and Kryptonians here. We're talking about aliens that people have supposedly come in contact with and have supposedly had encounters with. So extraterrestrials. And where do they possibly come from? What have we been told about them? Well, there's so many out there, isn't there? Where do you start? Yeah, I mean, you imagine something like a Star Wars movie or a Star Trek movie where there's aliens galore, and you're always running into a new species. And we have so many encounters here, yet we have little detail about where they actually come from, obviously. Otherwise, we'd know all about it and we'd know exactly where they come from. But tonight we're going to go over, we're going to cover greys, we're going to cover reptilians, Nordic aliens, insectoids, Pleiadians, and the Anunnaki as our top six, our main ones that we're looking at. And then we've got a few others, especially my favorite. A few of you who have been listening to the show for a long time. This is going back to episode 8 of all things, which I just recently re-listened to remember the story of this particular alien. And yeah, a little bit embarrassing listening to the earlier shows, but definitely they're on Spotify. We are having some trouble, by the way, at the moment with the Podbean dispersing out my show. So there are places where it's not playing. So iHeartRadio, places like that, it's just not playing on there. I'm onto the tech support team with Podbean. They've been very helpful, and we're hoping to rectify that soon. But right now, Spotify, 100%. Spotify is all over it. They've got every single episode from number one right through to number 88, which was the cults episode, the introduction to cults, and everything in between. So go and check it out. Go and give me a review on Spotify. There's a lot of changes to Spotify now since I've been gone, and a lot they've had to learn where all the cool kids are listening to podcasts nowadays. So Spotify seems to be the number one place, but eventually my show will be back out to all the original places. This episode should go out to all the original places. So they're telling me it's just the old episodes are having a bit of trouble right now. And yeah, so the alien I'm talking about there, I sort of went off on a tangent on you, is the elephant humanoids that we discussed. We did a whole episode on this, and those elephant humanoids, they are from Narrabeen in New South Wales, and there's only been one sighting of them here. Well, possibly a couple of others, but only one famous story of it. And we'll have a bit of a chat about them too as we go. They are one of my favorites, being an Australian sighted one. And I've got my own theories about them as well. So let's kick off with the greys. So the greys are stereotypical little grey dudes who come down from space and want to beam us up and do all sorts of experiments on us. That's what they're well known for, is experimenting on people, experimenting on our animals, and they're very, very well known for this. A lot of people reporting that when they've been abducted, that they are coming in contact with these little grey aliens with large black eyes. These do vary here and there, and it's quite interesting that they vary as well from decade to decade, or even every 20, 30 years. They tend to change a little bit. So we've always had those little green aliens, very much like the greys, very much the same design. People say that possibly they're the same creature, same species. They've had some most famous and commonly reported alien species. The greys, they are said to be small humanoid beings with large black eyes and grey skin. Some people claim that they have been encountered grey aliens and the grey aliens UFOs. Now, typically, when people encounter greys, this is where we get our stereotypical flying saucer type spaceship. The real... This is like right there in the nostalgia of ufology, rather, and we do see that. We see people saying they saw the stereotypical flying disc and the greys coming out of it, or they were beamed aboard the flying disc, the flying saucer. So we have them, and a lot of time the greys are associated with a species that want to interact with us, that want to study us, and they want to, some people say they are trying to help us to evolve, but tend to be a little on the, no pun intended, but the grey side. We don't really know what they want from the encounters that we've found, because some encounters they're saying that they've helped them, some encounters they're saying that they've definitely hurt them or hindered them, attacked people, attacked homes, attacked farms, farm animals especially. They love them some cows. And so let's have a look at a couple of famous grey alien encounters now. All right, let's take a look at probably the most notable encounter. This happened on July 8th, 1947. Many of you who are right into your UFOs and aliens will know that date as being the crash in Roswell, New Mexico. This is when two crafts allegedly crashed in different places in the New Mexico desert. Two bodies were found and one survivor, who would later be called EB, Extraterrestrial Biological Entity, by the Americans. This was the story that came out, a rancher found parts of a balloon on his property, parts of what he called a UFO on his property, but was later the government said it was a weather balloon. Lot of differing opinions about this, a lot of fierce debate on the internet around this and in public life as well, especially back then. And the government turned up, they cleaned everything up, took it all away. And being Roswell, you're out there, Area 51 and all that. Maybe, perhaps this could have been a plane or a vehicle they were testing. You could only imagine what they were building now that we know what they're capable of, what we actually have in drone technology and stuff. Going back then, though, that's a fair way back, 1947. But it may have just been a terrestrial craft that was man-made. But a lot of people do believe it was definitely an alien craft, an extraterrestrial craft. And then the story got around that this one survivor, EBE, was found and housed in Area 51. Actually, that's where the movie, if anyone's watched the movie Paul, that's where that came from. And they built that story from that. And Paul being a grey alien as well. And a lot of people believe that this story was what started sparking the belief in the grey aliens. So according to officials or people who were connected to the case, EBE died in 1952 due to a disease, and he came from the Zeta Reticuli star system. Now, this is where a lot of people say the greys come from. Most people agree, most true believers agree this is where they come from. The other probably biggest encounter with the Greys would have been Betty and Barney Hill, otherwise known as the Zeta Reticuli incident by many true believers. In 1961, Betty Hill and her husband Barney were driving along a New Hampshire road when they saw something in the sky that looked like a falling star. It turned out that Barney would say that he was abducted, and so is Betty. What they found was a large flying disc with two red lights on each side. And when the craft began to fly away, the Hills pursued the craft until the craft stopped. Barney got out of the car and looked at the craft with his binoculars. When he saw the creatures, he was shocked. They tried to get away, but they were soon abducted by the Greys. Waking up later, with no recollection of the last half hour. Under hypnosis, they would recover memories about being on the ship. Betty would later on draw a star map, which showed a ship, and a member of Mensa later identified the star system, the primary stars in a star map, as Zeta A and B Reticuli. Again, a lot of debate around that. There's a lot of debate the way the star map was drawn, that was extrapolating data and really stretching the data to fit the narrative. But then others 100% believe them. So the Greys also make their appearance in a lot of pop culture, and this is where it's led to people to believe that the government is trying to get us to become familiar with the Greys by exposure. So exposing us for years and years and years to grey aliens in movies and in TV shows and just anywhere they can put them. And it's made us begin to become normalized them. Another more popular, more well-known encounter as well was the Crowley's drawing of Lamb, the entity he believed he was in contact with. So Aleister Crowley did an episode on him as well. Go and check that out once it's check it out on Spotify. Aleister Crowley would talk about being in contact with a supreme being called Lamb, who would assist Crowley in his ascension, essentially, into with his powers. And he drew a picture of Lamb, and Lamb looks like your stereotypical grey alien. Smaller eyes, though, than what's been described by Betty and Barney Hill and by those at the those who encountered EBE, but definitely the same features, the broad features of the large head, grey skin, and he has him wearing a cloak in his picture, but I guess, you know, they might want to wear clothes here and there. We don't know. There's a lot of other places this pops up. So we see it in a lot of folklore. After the Betty and Barney Hill encounter, they'd become a mainstay. And you'd see this in Whitley Strieber's story, Communion, based on the true story. And you'd see it start to pop up there. Now, here's some stats for you all, for anyone who's interested. Greys are often involved in alien abduction claims. Among reports of alien encounters, greys make up about 50% in Australia, 73% in the United States, and 48% in the continental Europe, and around 12% in the United Kingdom. These reports include two distinct groups of greys that differ in height. So we've got taller, skinnier greys and your shorter greys as well. Abduction claims are often described as extremely traumatic, similar to an abduction by humans or even a sexual assault in the level of trauma and distress. The emotional impact of perceived abductions can be as great as that of a combat or sexual abuse and other traumatic events. The eyes are often a focus of the abduction claims, which often describe a grey staring into the eyes of an abductee when conducting mental procedures. This staring is claimed to induce hallucinogenic states or directly provoke different emotions. A lot of people believe there's telekinesis involved with the greys as well. Now, there's a few other beliefs around greys and what our memory could be of them or what could bring about someone thinking about grey aliens. There is a hypothesis called the Mother Hypothesis. In 2005, Frederick V. Maelstrom, writing in Skeptic Magazine, Volume 11, Issue 4, presents this idea that greys are actually residual memories of early childhood development. Maelstrom reconstructs the face of a grey through transformation of a mother's face based on our best understanding of early childhood. So basically what he says is that when people go through hypnosis, especially, what they're seeing as a grey alien may actually be memories of their mother or a mother figure or a father figure looking down at them in a crib or in a bed, things like that. They may also then attribute what's happening to them as being, well, you're getting your nappy changed, you're getting prodded, you're getting moved around, you think maybe doctors, maybe that could be a memory from the doctors as well. So that is one belief. Now, I'm not saying I believe that, but that is a hypothesis that's out there. It's called the Mother Hypothesis. Quite interesting. Very Nietzsche almost in what they study there with that idea. But then you've also got people looking at the how could a creature like that exist. So Jack Cohen said the typical image of a grey, assuming that it would have evolved from a world with different environmental and ecological conditions from Earth, is too physiologically similar to a human to be credible as a representation of alien life. The interdimensional hypothesis, the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis, and the time travel hypothesis attempt to provide an alternative explanation to the humanoid anatomy and behavior of these alleged beings. So that's one theory. A lot of people theorize, though, that aliens would look a lot like us, that Goldilocks planets would create life forms very similar to what we have, maybe differing a few features here and there. So again, a lot of debate about that, but definitely one of the most talked about, and also one of the most faked. We have seen fake autopsies all over the place. Every time you Google aliens, you'll see fake grey autopsies going on. A lot of these actually turned out to be 1940s and 1950s black and white films where people were just creating basically the beginning of art house films or the beginning of amateur filming. And it looks pretty good because of how bad the camera really is. So, and then obviously you've got your people who have faked it on purpose. So the grey aliens, as I said before, they are seen mostly flying in these flying saucer type ships as well. And a lot of people say that they use their elongated fingers as well as instruments to read people's minds, to control people. And another thing that is well documented by alleged abductees is that they have markings left on them after an encounter with them. Another thing is that they also leave things in the body of the person who they have left behind, who they've dropped off after the encounter. So people saying that they've had a microchip placed in their brain, people saying that they've had nanotechnology inserted into their body that they can't get out, that can't be picked up by our medical technology either. Then we've got people who have said that they have actually had microchips found in their body and they've had them removed. There's plenty of videos out there of people saying that this is a legit thing that was removed from them in surgery. Again, a lot of debate around that. They seem to be that, what would you call them? Chaotic neutral, I guess, if we're talking D&D terms. They just seem to want to study, but they don't seem to be doing anything nice in the way of how they study us. Very much studying us the way we would study a life form if we were to come across a brand new life form. A lot of time that means chopping them up. A lot of time that means doing unmentionable things to them. All right. So let's move on to our next set of aliens. And these would be the reptilians. Reptilians are another widely reported alien species. They are said to be humanoid beings with reptile-like features, such as scales and slitted eyes. Some conspiracy theorists believe that the reptilians are a powerful race that has infiltrated our governments and control much of the world. Now, this is where we're getting into some of that conspiracy theory, some of that juicy stuff right there. A lot of people do believe that they've got photographs of when a politician's eyes have changed, for instance, showing that they are actually a reptilian wearing a human skin suit. So there's plenty of pictures out there that you can find of this. A lot of time these pictures can be debunked as anomalies with the camera, lighting issues, and issues with the actual the photo, that it was so far away or it was blurred while moving. And again, then you've got your people also faking these photos as well. But when we think about reptilians have supposedly been around us for now hundreds of years. And if you follow some stories say they go right back all the way to ancient Egypt and Mesopotamia. There's a lot of belief that a lot of the artifacts we see coming out of ancient Egypt and ancient Greece, those sort of areas, that there's a lot of snake and a lot of reptilian references in there, and that this is a connection to that. I mean, there's a lot of reptilian references to everything really in history. I guess snakes being such a powerful and scary thing to a lot of people in medieval times, in ancient times as well, because you didn't just have antibiotics to recover from, but people were using this as a example because of the artifacts that we have found. We may as well talk about the ships like we did with the Greys. So a lot of people identify any encounters or abductions they've been have, identify their ships as more elongated. So possibly the cigar type ships that we're seeing that people are reporting, and possibly maybe the larger tic-tac style ships. We're also hearing people say that when they've been encountered, they've also come across more angular triangle-shaped ships, more aggressive-looking ships as well, very much a sci-fi type combat-style ship is what people are saying. But then people have also said they've encountered them with UFOs. One of the more interesting things is the angular shape. A lot of people do say there's angular shapes. Maybe this is in reference to some of the more Egyptian-style artifacts and architecture. A lot of people attributing reptilians to the pyramids. A lot of people attributing ancient Egyptian architecture and architecture from that from those regions as being very much driven by reptilians. A lot of people also associate this with ancient South American areas, with the temples and the square shaped pyramids, and a lot of people attribute that to the reptilians' hand. So you've got the reptilian humanoids conspiracy theory. So the reptilian humanoids conspiracy theory is that reptilian humanoids, which play a prominent role in science fiction, have made their way into our society. The idea of reptilians was popularized by David Icke. David Icke, a very polarizing character within the UFO community, for sure. I've heard of some people who want to talk to him all day long. They want to know everything about him. Then I meet other people who want to knock his head off. So there's definitely a polarizing opinion there. He's definitely an interesting character. He's a conspiracy theorist who claims that shape-shifting reptilians control Earth by taking on human form and gaining political power to manipulate human societies. Icke has stated on multiple occasions that many world leaders are or are possessed by so-called reptilians. The conspiracy also suggests that humans that are in power are being controlled by the reptilians. So some conspiracy theorists, rather, espousing the extraterrestrial hypothesis, claims they either come from the Draco constellation or the Orion constellation, and they are always seen as a more nefarious alien. So if the Greys are Zeta Reticuli and they're more interested in studying us and learning about us, then the Reptoids or the Reptilians are more of a invasionary force who have been there, done that, or don't care much for that at all. There's also a belief that they harvest souls is one part of the conspiracy theory, that they're here to harvest souls, and human souls are what they live on. So the political elite, this is where it really ties in. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at anyone who has that belief, but it is a way out there belief that the human elite, the political elite, military elite, the elite in movies like Superstars, you know, who you name it. Anyone who's elite basically is a part of this, or at least is controlled by them. So where did the origins come from? Well, there's been a few theories about where they come from. Again, they came from science fiction. The idea of the original reptilian conspiracy actually came from Conan the Barbarian creator Robert E. Howard in his story The Shadow Kingdom, which published in Weird Tales in August 1929. The story drew on theosophical ideas of the lost worlds of Atlantis and Lemuria, particularly Helena Blavatsky's The Secret Doctrine, written in 1888, with its reference to dragon men who once had a mighty civilization as a Lemurian continent. So yeah, there's a lot of science fiction, but a lot of fantasy fiction there as well. So Robert E. Howard's serpent men were described as humanoids who were able to imitate humans at will and who lived in underground passages and used their shape-changing and mind-control abilities to infiltrate humanity. We see these as well in the Cthulhu mythos, the tentacle boys. We see this in D&D, again, tentacle boys. We even see this in things like World of Warcraft, again, tentacles. So they get away from the reptilian. They get more into the octopus types, but very much the same idea, the serpent men. So alien abduction narratives sometimes allege contact with reptilian creatures. One of the earliest reports was that of Ashland in Nebraska. A police officer, Herbert Shermer, who under hypnosis recalled being taken aboard a UFO in 1967 by humanoid beings with a slightly reptilian appearance who wore a winged serpent emblem on the left side of their chest. Skeptics consider his claims to be a hoax, however. And of course, and as I said before, you've got David Icke as well. And a lot of the reptilian stuff is now being used in political discord. People not referring to them as actual aliens, they're just calling them reptilians, saying that they're baby eaters, things like that, that they don't care for the people. It's become a bit of a slur as well. So there's... yeah, there's a lot going on with the reptilians. They're in every level of government apparently, and they've got those shape shifting skills that make them hard to identify. According to reptilian believers, there's a few different types within there. You've got the elders. There are a line of royal elite that oversee everything, and their appearance is more in akin to dragons or demons. Then the greys are sometimes also brought in as part of this, but then there's a lot of contention around that as well. Then you got saurians. Saurians seem to be more like alligators, more like crocodile people. Think Sobek from the ancient Egyptian mythology. You've got Tumatians. According to some researchers, the reptoids which evolved on Earth in the Cretaceous period were not the original race. They were seeded by a far more advanced race. So there's a belief that we grew alongside. There was another race of reptoids, is what they call them, that grew alongside us, but they grew quicker than us. They evolved quicker than us, and that they then basically left the planet and used us as a research planet and then controlled us by having people come down and shapeshift. A lot of belief there with people saying that, again, go back to ancient Egyptian religion and mythology. A lot of people saying the large heads that they're seeing were the shapeshifting abilities. Anunnaki are pulled into this as well. We'll talk about them soon. And Draconians. Draconians are the largest reptoids and are sometimes said that they don't have the ability to shapeshift. They are seen as warrior types. They're seen as the ones who will come if we were to get out of line or if something were to go wrong, they would come in and they would basically rip us all to shreds. So there's a lot going on there with the people who believe in the reptoids, that's for sure. All right, so our next set of aliens are the Nordics, but we're going to combine a couple here. So we're going to combine Nordics, and we're also going to talk about the Pleiadians. Very similar, often confused between each other by people who believe in them, people who've had encounters with them. So let's have a discussion about them. So let's cover them off. So... Nordic aliens seen as very tall, often very very well made, so fit, strong, slender, very attractive apparently, very much perfect human beings is what a lot of people describe them as. Often seen with long blonde hair, and especially when encountering female Nordics or Pleiadians. The men often with beards or with long hair as well. And they are seen as a more passive, a more peaceful group. People have been seeing them since the 1950s, and they claim to be from Venus, and then later the Pleiades star cluster. So that's where the Nordic and Pleiades crossover happens, is when we think about where they've apparently come from, which is the Pleiadian star cluster. So Nordegalians are humanoid beings, and so are the Pleiadians. And so far, what people have found out, or what they've discussed about Pleiadians and Nordics, is that they are here to steer our spiritual side. There's a lot of spirituality amongst people who have encountered them or have reported having encounters with them, and they seem to want to steer us in a certain direction. A lot of people reported seeing them more, supposedly, after Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and a lot of people say that they came about because they were giving us warnings about our... basically us messing with nuclear arms and nuclear power as well. So a lot of protector sort of vibes coming from them. They appear in our mythological history as well, and some people have referred to them as space brothers or space brethren, and also as angelic beings. Some people have seen them as the Hopi. These are peaceful entities are believed to be the true white brothers, foretold in Hopi prophecy, signaling the end of the Fourth Age. The Vril Society, while generally seen as benevolent species, there's a chance that Vril Society was influenced by Nordics. Some factions might have deviated from the path of light, aligning with malevolent entities opposing the human race. And again, and then they appear in areas like Greece, in Scandinavian countries, a lot of European countries. There's been encounters in Greek mythology, Norse mythology, Roman mythology. A lot of people believe that's where they come from. Is they appeared to us well and truly back then, but definitely the 50s are when modern reports of them start to come about. So these are also attributed to the cigar-shaped ships, and also to spherical ships. So some people attribute the large silver balls that are seen floating in the skies to Nords, Nordics, or Pleiadians, and they've also been attributed to the cigar-shaped ships that have been seen as well. Few important encounters that have happened over the years. We had Truman Bethrum had a encounter in 1953. Bethrum first published magazine newspaper. Accounts of being contacted on 11 separate occasions, beginning in July 1952, by a humanoid crew of a landed spaceship near Mormon Mesa in the Mojave Desert of southern Nevada, and repeatedly conversing with its beautiful and voluptuous female captain, Aura Raines. Bethurum claimed the source and its crew, who spoke colloquial English, came from the planet Clarion, which was allegedly on the other side of the sun and thus could not be seen from the Earth. Bethrum's 1954 book, Aboard a Flying Saucer, gave many details of his suffering at the hands of skeptics and wrote a great deal about the purported Captain Raines, Clarion, and its people. Elizabeth Clara, Flying Saucer, was seen in 1954. Clara's sister May, when raising on the farm Whiteleaf in Natal Midlands, relayed to her that native Zulu people were reporting appearances of the lightning bird in the sky. In response, Elizabeth and her children travelled from Johannesburg to the farm, and she ascended Flying Saucer Hill the following day, 27th of December. There she claimed to have seen a starship descend. It hovered 3 meters above the ground, emitting only a soft hum. Its hull spinning through its central dome remained stationary. The spaceman, who later identified himself as Akon, was supposedly clearly visible through one of three portholes, but a barrier of heat that emanated from the ship prevented her from approaching, and his scout ship departed again. On the 7th of April, 1956, she visited the hilltop again after further reports of the lightning bird. This time, Akon took her aboard his scout ship, a craft 6 feet in diameter, so it's 18 meters wide. Inside, she met a second pilot, stocky and darker skinned than Akon, who was supposedly a botanist as well as an astrophysicist. She was allegedly shown a lens that offered views through the craft's floor, with only a hum emanating from below and no sense of movement. They were transported to the enormous cigar-shaped mothership, which had a garden-like interior. After meeting its inhabitants, she was returned to the hilltop, a similar arrangement as that made between Adamski and Oron in 1952. She reports that Akon was in fact a reincarnated Venusian, and that they would take Earth women aboard and take them as their wives. So Elizabeth's story gets pretty out there. So in April 1958, a series of contacts reportedly started that set Clara's story apart from the UFO stories that were standard in the 50s. Clara claimed that Akon's visits culminated in a day-long rendezvous with Elizabeth on the high plateau of Cathkin Peak, that he presented her with a silver ring that enhanced their telepathic connection, and that their love was consummated and a child was conceived. Clara claimed that after terrestrial pregnancy, she and her MG car were transported in 1959 to Akon's home planet, Meton, orbiting Proxima Centauri in the nearby multiple star system Alpha Centauri. There she delivered a son who was given the name Eiling. He stayed behind on Meton to be educated while Elizabeth reluctantly came home. Meton's planetary vibration supposedly affected her heart, and she was consequently not permitted to return, instead receiving follow-up visits from Akon and Ailing. The whole trip, delivery and return trip, supposedly took no more than 4 months, due to differences in space-time, allowed her a 9-year stay on Meton. So, Pretty out there story. I'll do deeper dives into all of these at a later stage. These are more introductions to these types of aliens that people reported. Because trust me, her story gets pretty interesting. So I'll definitely report that one for you all. There's so many out there. You've also got an interesting story there from Billy Meyer as well. Billy Meyer is a, I guess you'd say he's a prophet, self-proclaimed prophet, and he is the founder of the UFO religion called the Free Community of Interest for the Border and Spiritual Sciences and Ufological Studies. He's alleged to be a contactee, and his story, if you want to know a bit more about his story, please check out the Billy Meyer story I did. I do a very big deep dive into him. Long story short, not a fan. And and his worshippers, followers, believers aren't a fan of me either. Many have reached out to tell me how angry they are about what I reported and how I reported it. A lot of debunked things that he has claimed, and well worth looking into if you are interested in that as well. I've already done that one, so go and have a look. All right, so another one who is pretty well known is Travis Walton. Travis Walton claims that that they were Nordic people who took him on. So Walton was working as a logger in Arizona when he came across a hovering alien craft with his lumber crew and was knocked unconscious by a beam of light emanating from the object. He was taken aboard where he encountered several types of beings, including a Nordic-like race of tall white humanoids. The craft released him 5 days later, and the subsequent story became a news sensation. Walton shared his experience in the book, The Walton Experience, which became the basis of the 1993 film Fire in the Sky. It's quite a tricky one. He's one that I would like to believe, but there are some holes in the story, but then there's a lot of things he hasn't changed. So I don't know. There's a lot there. Again, we'll be diving into a lot more of this year. George Jemski was another one who had an early Nordic contact in 1950s and claimed to be a contact with a group of Nordic aliens from Venus. He wrote several books on the subject and said these materials were cleared by the FBI and United States government. However, there hasn't been anyone from the government to say that these were covered up in the first place, or these were private in the first place. So, but that's what his claim is. And there's also a rumor that President Eisenhower had a secret meeting with a group of Nordic extraterrestrials who were attempting to convince the United States to disarm its nuclear missile program in exchange for advanced technology. The event is said to have taken place in February 1954 at Edwards Air Force Base under the guise of Eisenhower undergoing emergency dental surgery. It's believed that this meeting did not end with any sort of agreement. Instead, Eisenhower is thought to have entered into a treaty with the Grey Aliens, a pact ensuring that the United States could keep its nuclear arsenal while still receiving advanced technologies from the ETs in exchange for this technological intel. The Greys would be allowed to abduct and experiment upon the American people without question. So another little alien conspiracy there. And yeah, there's a lot of them. So we will cover off those throughout the year. The layers of these stories, the hardest thing for me to believe is that no one has slipped up in a bad way yet. Like for a conspiracy to really work, you have to have a lot of people who are willing to keep their mouths shut and never slip up. Or you have to have a really good way of stopping people from spreading a message or spreading a word. Or you got to have a lot of people working on things in the dark that they don't realize they're working on. So there's a lot of different stories there that intertwine with each other. And there's also a lot of people believe that the craft that Bob Lazar claims to have worked on that had no engine, no clear visible engine, and no fuel that he could see from the outside, no fuel source directly into the engine. May have been a Nordic sphere type craft as well. So the Nordics and the Palladians, they pop up a lot. They are very, very popular amongst true believers. Strangely enough, they also seem to be the ones that enjoy having interrelations with our human species the most as well. I guess it's more interesting for people to talk about having sex with a 7-foot-tall, beautiful, blonde, blue-eyed alien than one with tentacles that looks like Jabba the Hutt. But definitely there's a lot of reports of them, and we will do a whole story on them and a lot of their encounters. So who else do we have left? So we're sort of winding down now. We've got the insectoids. Now, the insectoids are a lesser-known alien species. They are said to resemble insects or arachnids. They are often described as having multiple limbs and insect-like eyes. Some people claim to have encountered insectoids during abductions or close encounters. There's beliefs, there's stories that people are told from abductions that the insectoids are aliens that have been working with the reptilians. There's also stories that the insectoids are actually at war with the reptilians, and that if the insectoids were to come here, they would actually do worse to us than what the reptilians would, even though it's hard to say, because if the reptilians are behind all the world leaders, then I guess maybe the reptilians are making us kill each other. But I mean, we've got nukes and haven't launched them at each other yet. So maybe they could be doing a better job. But I guess that ties in again to the belief that both these These aliens, reptilians, and insectoids both want us for some certain reason. A lot of the belief of that is to do with our souls and a spiritual side, a spiritual aspect. And that's where the Nordics tie in, the Pleiadians tie in as well. A lot of people saying that the Pleiadians and Nordics are here to protect us, here to save us from these other species that are out there. So let's have a look at the insectoid aliens. So a lot of reports suggest that ships that are seen around the same time as insectoid abductions or aliens have been witnessed have been seen as being angular, triangle-shaped ships or arrowhead-shaped ships. So some people believe the Black Knight spacecraft that's been seen flying around Earth may be run by insectoid aliens. There's been beliefs that the any aircraft that looks like a V may be insectoid in nature as well. So if we think about that, very much sounds like the Phoenix Lights. Again, we did an episode on that. Have a look on that on Spotify. And a lot of people believe the Phoenix Lights may have been due to insectoid aliens as well. So insectoid aliens, exactly what they sound like, large insect-looking aliens. Many people see them as being the Prey Mantis style, and a lot of people connect this to when people have had experiences using ayahuasca and other hallucinogenic drugs such as ayahuasca, the real strong ones, that a lot of people see the same Prey Mantis type being. A lot of connection there. People saying that it is a creature that we all know. It's a creature that knows us. So many encounters that people have had or eyewitnesses have said that they look like Prey Mantises. So there's been a few encounters with these creatures over the years. So one abduction recounted to ufologist Kenny Young was a abduction that was either in 1964 or 1965. It was somewhere in the 60s, though. This was from Benjamin Davidson in Kentucky, memory of which didn't return to Benjamin until the 1990s, when something about accidentally burning the hairs on his hand with a cigarette triggered the memory. Benjamin was working as an exterminator around Cincinnati and Portsmouth, Ohio, when traveling between those two points, he had to stop on the road as it was blocked by a silvery disc-shaped object that landed there. As he looked upon the multiple lights of the craft, he slowly became aware that he was not alone. On either side of the vehicle, there were giant mantids. They did not speak to him, but the body language of one recounted as the escort got him to leave his vehicle and walk with the non-violent entity to the craft. There he was taken to an examination room where blood was drawn, skin taken from the palm of his hand, and nails clipped. He remembers being totally at peace, waiting to be addressed or spoken to until he saw another examination table. Upon it was a little girl who was evidently deceased. The calm faded from him and he became distressed with an overwhelming sensation of helplessness at the sight of this dead child. His distress was noticed and that's when he blacked out. Coming to within his car, the craft and mantids were gone. Benjamin apparently remembered more of what happened but died of cancer in May 2001 before being able to provide more to ufologist Kenny Young. In 1987, we had North Carroll Road incident recounted by Martin Jasek. Insectoid abduction, the North Carroll Road incident. A man named Kevin encountered insectoids in August, September 1987. The abductee had gone on a hunting trip upon his motorbike and made a stop on North Carroll Road to relieve himself. It was a wild so that he looked up and saw a noiseless cigar-shaped craft resembling a bus-sized DC-3 plane with portholes along the sides, a grey stripe along its centre, and green on the top and bottom. He was bewildered until feeling something was very off about what he was seeing. Evidently, he believed it was a low-flying plane until it dawned on him that there was no noise and no wings. Returning to his bike, Kevin decided to hide, but feeling his camera felt like taking a picture while doing so. However, as soon as he grasped it, he was overcome with calming sensation and again felt there was no need to let anyone know that anything was unusual. When the craft was out of view, Kevin emerged from hiding, feeling rather excited about the whole experience, and it was in his excitement that he heard a metallic thud. He returned, thinking a car door had closed and someone else may have seen it too, but what he saw was not a person. In a blue jumpsuit, where Kevin described as grey grasshopper people, one of them raised a hand to their waist towards a flashlight device, and in an instant, Kevin felt paralyzed and blacked out. So he would later come to, and he was told there was nothing to worry about, and after months of restless slumber, Kevin recalls that while the first part of the encounter was scary, once aboard the craft, he found the insectoids to be rather friendly. They showed him Earth from above. They offered to take him to the other worlds and to see the stars, but Kevin declined and was told that he'd have to forget their encounter. He was sad, but drank the yellow beverage that was going to cause him his amnesia. Evidently, it didn't work as intended, given his visit by the Grey sometime later and to return his memories of the event, which put Kevin's formerly restless mind at ease. So he had another encounter with an alien, a Grey, that put his mind at ease. In the year 2000, Kevin was informed by his doctor that the condition is called, called Dupuytren's contracture. And there is no known cause for it. Kevin attributed it to being abducted. So what he was finding was he had scoop marks on each one of his palms of his hands and residual burning sensation on those points. And he would just constantly have these burning sensations on there, and also the loss of memory. So I'll do more deep diving into that one. That's definitely it goes pretty out there. And then we have an insectoid that was seen flying over an aircraft in 1957. She got a 3-foot-tall praying mantis-like entity 2 days after a V-shaped UFO sighting. Mantis-like creature is reminiscent of the insectoid-type entity reported in some abduction accounts. Related the report to the fellow researcher, Leonard Stringfield. Stringfield told him 2 cases he had in his files where separate witnesses report identical circumstances. A lot of time there's insectoid creatures being seen just flying in the air themselves. No sign of wings, but I guess you could imagine if you look at a fly flying, you can't see its wings while it flies. So same type of thing, I guess. So it's, the insectoid aliens, very, very interesting. And so many, definitely a lot more reports of those than, say, something like the reptilians. There's a lot of reports of reptilians, but a lot of reports on the insectoids. And a lot of people believe that this is another one that is fed to us. So through things like Alien with our aliens, and we've got Starship Troopers, a lot of insectoid type creatures in a lot of pop culture. All right, so we'll get to the last of our top six here. And that's the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki are a hypothetical alien species that some people believe played a role in human history. They are said to be a race of tall humanoid beings that genetically engineered humanity for their own purposes. Some people believe that the Anunnaki have returned to Earth and are working with governments in secret. And a lot of people believe the Anunnaki are what we consider, what we call giants in ancient history. And when we talk about giants, if we see giants in especially European history, that they're talking about the Anunnaki, and that they stayed with us until they weren't needed anymore, and then they left the planet to us. And there's a lot of belief that they basically planet hop, seeding new planets and creating new new civilizations as they go. So, they're very much similar to your Pleiadians and your Nordics, except this more more belief in they're the creator type aliens. So a lot of believers in the Anunnaki believe they are what we considered gods. They are our creators, according to many people. Not many encounters with them that I can find, but I will do a deeper dive on them at some point, and we'll find some encounters. Not too many encounters I could find that are really noteworthy at the moment, but there don't seem to be ones that people have identified as being abducted by, for instance, which would make sense in a creator type system. So I guess they're a bit like me in that sense. When I'm playing SimCity, I don't like to just take my people away. a lot of interesting encounters there. I'm going to end on my favorite, and that is the elephant humanoid. This creature is just so interesting to me. It's been spotted in Narrabeen Lake, which is in New South Wales, Australia. And I've been to Narrabeen Lake. I've walked around. I believe that if they are an alien species that were here, that it was just per chance that they were seen there that night. I've also got some theories of my own as well, which they sort of goes against that they're aliens. In 1968, a woman named Mabel Walsh saw a strange being standing in the lake. Her description was, it was a bit over 4 feet tall, with dark grey, tough, leathery skin like an elephant's. It had small front legs and walked on its hind legs, which were thick and round like an elephant's. There were no tails or ears, but I saw a trunk that was like an anteater's, rigid and squared off at the end and stuck out at an angle. It then came out of the water, stood up on its legs, and ran into the bush with a shuffling sideways run. In 1971, there were two fishermen who were fishing in Narrabeen Lake at night. They saw a peculiar brutish grey animal with an unusual locomotion as it went through the water. Later that night, an anonymous woman said she was awoken by a horrible gurgling noise. There was no proof that it was the same creature, although the creature has not been sighted since that night. It has raised speculation about what the creature could have been, but nonetheless is remembered as one of the most bizarre cryptids found around the world. So we are known for our weird and wonderful cryptids. We do have quite a few, take the platypus, for instance. No one believed the platypus could be a thing that existed, but there it is. So we do have some weird cryptids, nothing in our, fossil file, of recent that would say that we have anything like that. We do have, palacrests, which are a anteater type animal, from our history. But I'm going to look at this one this time from the alien point of view. If you want to hear more about the cryptid side of it, go and watch the go and listen to the episode about the alien humanoid. Sorry, the elephant humanoids, and you'll get a different perspective there. But from the idea that this thing could be an alien, now there's a belief that I've had for a while, and I managed to talk to a few people about 2 years back from the area around Narrabeen Lake, and a few people actually knew of the story and had talked to people who had either had conversations with the people involved or remember when the big blow up happened, when it was still fresh. And there's a lot of people who say that they believe it was actually someone in a suit, in a sort of a hazmat style suit with some sort of breathing apparatus on their mouth, and that and pretty much what they're reporting seeing as a trunk is actually a hose hooked up to some sort of breathing apparatus inside the suit, or it's a breathing apparatus that's short, like a short hose coming off the face of the suit. So if we want to take that from the alien side of things, this could be some sort of space suit. This could be some sort of protective suit for being on Earth. It would make sense as to if these are creatures who are just exploring, we could get into. I mean, I'm looking at the time now. I'm already at, I'm just going over an hour. So I didn't actually want this to be an hour long episode. I'm just really enjoying being back. Yeah, so a lot of people consider maybe it was some sort of an alien species doing some research here. My thoughts were that, but also the other side of it, it could be someone who is genuinely actually wearing a hazmat suit for whatever reason. Maybe they were goofing around. Maybe they were just trying to stir people up. If you look up some of the older World War II hazmat and gas suits, they were very much a grey, thick, leathery type of material, and would have had a face like that mask as well. And potentially this could have been people maybe what we'd call in Australia a shit stirrer, or it could have been someone who was just having a bit of fun, or maybe someone who was using the suit for other reasons. Perhaps they were out there researching something, maybe they were out there looking for something, and they thought they might need to protect themselves from gases or something for some reason. But yeah, there's a lot of belief, though, getting around that these things were, this was an alien encounter. And there is other encounters around the world with alien elephant humanoids. And they are rare. They are very few in between. But a lot of people would put them down. If you consider, like, so my belief is, like, any alien fans out there, as in the movie Aliens, Malakak, Malakak are the pilots, basically, of the alien ships. And they've got like a trunk that hooks into their chest carapace. Very, very interesting style alien. And that's sort of what I'm thinking when I look at them, when I hear the story. But yeah, it's very, very interesting. And they do. There's a couple of stories of them popping up, and they've always been seen as short, though. Like the Malakak and Alien are quite tall. But every report that I've found, the few that I've found, have all been reported to being below 5 feet, 4 feet at the highest, I think I've found. So definitely something we're going to do a little bit more research on. Something I'm going to take a deeper dive into. But for now, that sort of covers us for the main. That's like really the, apart from my little elephant friend at the end there, that's the main six aliens that people report encountering. And they're the main six aliens that I'm going to start doing some deep diving into. Maybe get some interviews of some people who've had experiences, or maybe get some interviews of people who have the opposite opinion, who have genuine genuine evidence as to why some of these would be fake, or why some of these wouldn't work at all. So happy to talk to anyone who is from either side of the camp, but reach out to the email address, theoddballaussie@hotmail.com, or reach me on Twitter, now X. I'm still getting used to that. That's another thing that changed while I was away. Twitter turned into X. Feels like a lifetime ago now. So I'm getting used to that, but I'm still going to call it Twitter. It's just going to be a habit. I know I won't be able to break it. So I hope you've enjoyed the first one back. It was a little bit rough, I won't lie. I'm using a new audio system. So my cutting and my editing's been a little bit different, and I just wanted to get something out there so you all knew that I was back, and that it will get the ball rolling, really kick my ass a bit to get me back into gear. And yeah, I'm enjoying being back. So a lot's more to come. There's a lot planned for this year, and I hope that you will jump back on board if you are a returning listener, and I hope that you will continue if you're a new listener. Again, a little bit rough with this episode, threw this one together fairly quickly. I've got others that I'm working on that aren't ready yet, but definitely a few ideas getting around. We might do some live streaming as well, where we can have conversations and discuss things with people. There's a lot of a lot of ideas being thrown around the cave of oddities at the moment, and we'll see what sticks to the wall at the end. All right. So thank you again for joining me. If you enjoyed this, please put the review on Spotify and keep an eye out. Hopefully the Podbean company will have everything sorted out for me soon, and you'll be able to listen to me back on all your different platforms again. But for now, look after each other and stay safe out there in the weird. Good night.